the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you the latest world news and health research. I hope everybody is having a terrific day today. It's going great down here at Health Masters. We actually have some nice, hot, decent weather lately. It's staying hot, but it's not raining every day, which I kind of actually honestly enjoy that, because the rain doesn't seem to help anymore. It just makes things at 99% humidity and even hotter. So, yeah, other than that, how are you doing today?
Well, I like it when it rains late in the afternoon, about 5 or 6 when the sun's going down, because that way it doesn't have a chance to cook again. Yeah, but you're right, the raining at 12 o'clock and then sunny at from 1 to 6 is the worst. So, yeah, but I'm doing great. This is the day the Lord hath made, whether it rains, whether it's hot, whether we have high humidity, that makes no difference to me. I'm glad to be still sitting on the planet, you know, sunny side up, you know, doing something with my life and having fun. I mean, that's just how I look at it. I'm happy to be here. But speaking of Christianity right now, as far as quoting scripture, China now has demolished hundreds of more churches and is confiscating Bibles during a crackdown on Christianity. Locals in Henan stated concerns of a move by the atheist ruling Community Party to control Christianity. This is the Communist Party. Residents were asked to replace posters of the cross and Jesus Christ with portraits of President Xi Jinping. Experts say the government is waging the most severe systematic suppression of the religion since 1982. Chinese leaders have always been suspicious of the political threat that Christianity poses to the regime, because, of course, Christianity and communism are basically mutually exclusive. They simply cannot exist together. Christianity will eventually overwhelm the communist system if it's allowed to, like it did in Rome, because people got tired of seeing people thrown to the lions and be crucified. And so they finally said, hey, this is just the pits, man. I mean, crucifixion is one of those things that's like, you know, should have died out with the Dark Ages. But my next story, Saudi Arabia, the bastion of Muslim world, Mecca, the bastion of the religion of peace, has carried out a rare crucifixion. God, you can't make this stuff up. On a Myanmar man who was accused of stabbing a woman to death in her home. Elias Al-Bukami entered a Myanmar woman's home with a gun. He was convicted of robbing her home, attempted raping of her, and stealing firearms. The man's execution and crucifixion was endorsed by King Salman, religion of peace leader. The Saudi government said that it comes as Saudi Arabia is locked in a row with Canada over human rights. Now, think about this for a second. He was crucified. Now, you could hang on a cross for days and suffer because you eventually either bleed out or you suffocate because you can no longer pick yourself up to breathe. And it is probably one of the most barbaric, one of the most torturous types of death you can do. I mean, these are the same guys that like to take people out first of the year and do a bunch of beheadings. Well, quite frankly, if I had the option of being beheaded or being crucified, God, what a horrible choice it is. It's kind of like voting for Bill Nelson or Rick Scott. Sorry, I just thought I'd throw that in there. You know, I would choose the lesser and the quicker of the two, which would be the beheading, which would be Governor Rick Scott, our known Second Amendment abuser. But the reality is now we see what Saudi Arabia is really all about with their beheadings and crucifixion. I mean, gosh, awesome. And what are we dealing with 2,000 years ago in ancient Rome when people get crucified on crosses? This is absolutely nuts. What do you think about that?
Crucifixion is a rough way to die. As you said, most times, especially what happens is you suffocate because you continually have to try to push yourself up to get a gasp of air in while your arms are spread all the way apart, and you can only hold that for so long until you start going to severe muscle fatigue. So usually by 2 or 3 days, you reach a point where you're so physically exhausted, you're so dehydrated, and you're so just completely and totally essentially shot out. You can no longer raise yourself up to get a gasp of air in anymore, and you eventually just pretty much hang there and suffocate. It really is bad. I mean, because that's usually the primary thing, suffocation or dehydration, because remember, usually stripped down almost to nothing, and you're sat out in the bare sun with nothing to drink for days on end, and you're sitting there just sweating profusely trying to breathe. pretty horrible. I mean, but again, nobody talks about this with Saudi Arabia. Why? Because they're our friends. We give them money still. They're cool. We don't do anything about that. We just kind of let them do whatever they want, even though they still behead people and crucify people. Mainstream media never wants to talk about it because they're basically part of our friend status that we give money to every single year, which still blows my mind with how wealthy they are. But speaking of actually a cool country that I grow to like more and more by the day, it's funny how the mainstream media has made Russia basically the big bad boogeyman. We're basically told we have to hate Russia. We don't know why we're supposed to hate Russia, but we're supposed to just hate Russia because, well, they're Russians, and we're just supposed to hate Russians because they supposedly hacked an election 2 years ago that I don't even think they were involved in significantly. And so for that, we're supposed to hate them. However, when you hear things like this from Vladimir Putin, it makes me understand even more why they want us to hate Russia. Russia President Vladimir Putin has slammed Pope Francis yesterday for pushing political ideology instead of running the church. Putin warned Pope Francis is saying that the leader is not a man of God. And I quote, this is what Putin said. Pope Francis is using his platform to push a dangerous, far-left political ideology on vulnerable people around the world, people who trust in him because of his position. If you look at what the Pope says, it is clear he is not a man of God, or at least not the Christian God, not the God of the Bible that we know. His dreams of a world government and a global communist system of oppression are horrific, as we have seen before. Foreign communist states, this system is not compatible with our Christianity whatsoever. In the past years now, we've seen this current pope has become increasingly active in pushing basically this globalist agenda and the far-left talking points. Pope Francis even called for a global central bank and a financial authority. More recently, he said Americans need to be ruled by a world government as soon as possible for their own good. The Catholic leader is even reported as referring to China's one-child policy for Western nations need to start adopting it, and very other harmful and basically horrible things that he talks about on a regular basis that we refer to. But when I saw that Putin basically called the Pope out at he addressed a crowd at the Naval Cathedral of St. Nicholas in Kronstadt, when I saw this article and I saw this quote, I thought it was pretty interesting, Dad, that he really, really called him out, and he clarified what God he was referring to as well. I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, Putin has said that the West is controlled by Satan and they worship Lucifer. This is quote. I've read it multiple times on the show and on Hagman's show. And he's right. And the reason for that is we're not following the God of the Old Testament with our leadership in Washington. We're following the ancient Egyptian gods and all of the weird stuff that they believe. If you go to the Capitol building and the Capitol Rotunda, you look up, and basically everybody's ascended to Mount Olympus. Jesus is nowhere to be found. Washington is now a god, and he's ascended to Mount Olympus. And there's the pictures of all the pagan gods in the Capitol Rotunda, which is all part of the Isis worship, which, of course, we all know that the Washington Monument is a giant phallic symbol, which for that's a family show. It's just basically the genitalia of a male. And so it's just that's what this is. I mean, so this is what we have in Washington, D.C., with the Masonic lodges. I mean, Reverend Pike said in his book, Morals and Dogma, you can read it, I can quote it to you, that what they want to do is basically conquer and bring in the seething energies of Lucifer is their goal. This is what they want. That's why the entire capital structure was built in a pentagram with an open leg to allow the energies to come in and be trapped of Lucifer inside of the open leg of the pentagram, allowing the negative influence, the negative satanic influence, to be trapped in D.C. And I think they've done a pretty good job of that with all the pedophilia and weirdo stuff that goes on up there. So, I mean, so this is our government. This is, I mean, the whole look it up. Washington, D.C. laid out a formation of a pentagram. And so this is what Putin's talking about. He's right. The mass fastment. I mean, you got to look at the Congress, guys. Drugs, alcohol, whores, you know, illegal campaign contributions, compromise, pedophilia. The list goes on and on and on. And I mean, it's so funny. I'm getting hammered now on social media saying that I'm saying that everybody in Washington, D.C. is a pedophile. I never said this. Let me clarify my statement here so everybody gets this. I believe over 50% of the congressional people have been compromised in one way or the other. Do the things I just listed. It's not just through pedophilia. It can be through campaign contributions. It can be through tax evasion. It can be through all of these different things. But what I want people to understand is that it's not just about pedophiles in Washington. Though when you go up there, you're going to be shocked beyond belief if you ever visit Washington, D.C., of how many gays are there and how many gays work in the halls of Congress. I was there a few years ago with Coach Dave Dobermeyer, and we were there for about 6 days. Toured everything around. I was speaking up there that time at a convention for Rodney Howard Brown, just a few blocks away from the Capitol building in the White House. I spoke for 2 nights there. And I was shocked when we went through the halls of Congress. I couldn't find one assistant or one aide of any congressman in D.C. when I was there who wasn't effeminate. I'm not saying they're gay. They just acted gay. They were very, very effeminate. I didn't see any real men. And finally, I looked at Coach Dobermeyer often, and I said, "What the heck, man?" I said, "Is everybody here queer?" I said, "This is nuts, man. Is this really what we've come down to now in the United States? We got a bunch of gays running Washington or effeminate guys running Washington?" I said, "We're the real men. We're the Ted Browers and the Austin Browers and the Ted Nugents. You know, I mean, where are these guys? Where are they in Congress?" And then you see Lindsey Graham running around carrying his purse. He's as queer as a $3 bill. And you wonder, do these people, you know, really get elected? These guys are like ultimately effeminate. And it's just ridiculous to me, Austin. And then they want to be war hawks and want to start war with Russia. And Russia's calling them out for being basically weirdos and a bunch of Luciferians. And he says the doggone Pope's Luciferian, which we know is true. Remember, there's been a big rift between the Russian Orthodox Church and the Catholic Church for a long, long time. I like the Russian Orthodox Church, and I like the Greek Orthodox Church. I do. They're very close to Christianity, but they don't have the same Pope, a lot of the same beliefs. The problem with all of this stuff is that, you know, the Catholic Church, because it ran the planet for so long, became so compromised in political intrigue and bribery and selling of get-out-of-hell cards. Okay, I'm going to say this so everybody can understand it. They're called indulgences, for those who are new listeners. An indulgence is a get-out-of-hell-free card, and they would basically say, "We need to have you give us your entire family estate because your mom and your dad are in hell." They told the priest that they were in hell when we were praying the other day, and they're being tortured and tormented. So if you give us all of your estate, all of your farmlands, all of your homes, and all your money when you die, we will give you an indulgence, which is going to be a get-out-of-hell-free card for your family who's roasting right now and burning in purgatory and hell. You say, "Well, they didn't really do that." They really did do that.
Yeah, they did.
That's how gosh, you can't even make this crap up. And they did it, and that's how they built these giant cathedrals. I mean, when you drive into Cologne, Germany, one of the cathedrals that made it through the war, the thing stands hundreds of feet tall. You see it miles and miles and miles out of the city. You see the giant spears sticking up. And this thing was built, they started building this thing like 1,000 years ago. Can you imagine a peasant who's living in a mud hut, who's basically having sustenance farming, trying to feed himself, who's coming to church, it's a doggone Catholic church, and he's in a wagon being pulled by oxen, and he's basically trying to fight off the flies and the bugs and everything else, not trying to have his family starve in his journey to see the cathedral in Cologne, and miles out of the city he sees this giant structure 1,000 years ago, he'd be freaking out. Obviously, this must be of God, he thought. Obviously, only God could build something like this. I live in a mud hut. I've got my money here with me. I'll give as much as I possibly can. And that's what they did. Over and over and over ago, the Catholic Church would endorse the clergy who would endorse the kings of the doggone countries, Austin. It ran everything. And that's how corrupt it got. It got completely and totally corrupted. And it's sad because I know a lot of good, God-believing, Jesus-loving Catholics. I know them personally. But I also know a lot of Christians who don't think Catholics are even saved. I think that's a personal decision that a Catholic has to make. And quite frankly, if you read the Apostles' Creed, "I believe in God the Father Almighty, maker of heaven and earth, and in Jesus Christ, his only Son, our Lord, who was conceived by the Holy Spirit, born of the Virgin Mary, suffered and died, crucified, rose again on the third day, ascended into heaven, and sitteth on the right hand of God the Father Almighty." That's like a very detailed sinner's prayer. Okay, it really is. And if you say that, in the Lutheran Church, you say that every Sunday. Now, if you're doing it as a rote memory and you don't mean it, because your parents told you you're going to get spanked if you don't go to catechism, you know, learn how to do all this stuff, or go to, that's true. You have to learn this, or I'm going to spank you. You have to learn this, or I'm going to beat you. Well, okay, I'll learn it. Well, you don't have any personal relationship with God when you say something like that. But if you really mean that as an adult, and you have a deep-seated heart change, and you really want to worship Yahweh and Yeshua, and you mean it when you say it from your heart, I can't tell you those people aren't saved. I won't do that because it's not my place to say that. Only God knows the heart. Well, let me get off all the lecturing stuff here. How Sugar Keeps You Trapped in a Cycle of Addiction. It's a pretty good article. It's by Egan. It says, sugar is incredibly addictive. It says, basically, what you have to understand, right now, a half pound of sugar per day is what we're eating in the United States. It's about 30 to 60 teaspoons of sugar in a 24-hour period. 4 grams of sugar equals 1 teaspoon, so 1 can of soda contains almost 8 teaspoons of sugar. Cranberry, pomegranate, grape, and orange juice contains 48 to 63 grams of sugar per 12 ounces, which is like 12 teaspoons of sugar per serving. And you get all of this stuff into your body, which causes massive problems with your insulin, and also it triggers dopamine. Substance use disorders, the sufferer is defined by the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, exists when at least 2 or 3 symptoms from a list of 11 are present. In animal models, sugar produces at least 3 symptoms consistent with substance abuse and dependence: cravings, tolerance, and withdrawal. Other drug-like properties of sugar include, but are not limited to, cross-sensitization, cross-tolerance, cross-dependence, and neurochemical changes in the brain. In animal studies, animals experience sugar like a drug and become addicted to sugar. One study has shown that if given the choice, rats will choose sugar over cocaine. I'm going to say that again. Rats will choose sugar over cocaine. One study I said they will choose Oreo cookies over cocaine because the reward is greater and the high is more pleasurable. Sugar stimulates brain pathways just like an opioid would. And sugar has been found to be habit-forming in people. Cravings induced by sugar are comparable to those induced by addictive drugs like cocaine and nicotine. And although other food components may also be pleasurable, sugar may be uniquely addictive in the food world. For instance, functional MRI tests involving milkshakes demonstrate that it's the sugar, not the fat, that people crave. You get this intense release of dopamine upon acute ingestion of sugar. After you chronically consume it, those dopamine receptors start becoming downregulated. There's less of them and less responsive, which can lead to ADD-like symptoms, but it can also lead to a mild state of depression because we know that dopamine is the reward transmitter. Guys, be careful with sugar. That's why years ago we pulled the fructose out of our protein powder. We just didn't want it in there because it causes fatty liver and all kinds of other problems, including the same response. High fructose corn syrup needs to be avoided. It's really that bad. Sugar needs to be avoided. It's really that bad. Now, in tiny concentrations, sugar's not going to hurt you. Let me give you an example. Let's say you're going to have a cup of coffee one day and you're not drinking it every day, and you have a choice between Splenda or NutraSweet or a teaspoon of sugar. Use the teaspoon of sugar. Yeah, you heard me right. I just told you to do that. If you can, if you have another choice, Sweet and Low, which is sodium saccharin, you could use that or the sugar, because saccharin takes a lot of very high concentration to cause any problems, and it doesn't stimulate the pancreas like sugar does. But quite frankly, stay away. And so you have different colors. You've got the yellow, you've got the blue, you've got the raw sugar, which is the brown, and you've got the pink. If you can do any of those, stay in the pink. Stay in the saccharin category or a little bit of sugar, but don't use the Sweet and Low. Don't use the Splenda. Now, also, remember, you can use Stevia, but I used to be a coffee connoisseur, and quite frankly, Splenda tastes awful. It tastes awful in coffee. It's terrible. Yeah. And you could also, you know, same thing with the aspartame. It tastes awful in coffee. And so, I've tried all that stuff, you know, 20 years ago, but I just don't use that stuff. And so I stay away from that. Coconut sugar, it's okay in coffee. But if you have a cup of coffee, like I say, a few times a month, you put a few teaspoons of sugar in it, it's better than the artificial sweetener stuff, Austin. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, I absolutely do on it. I mean, the thing is, your body can process a little bit of sugar. There's not an issue with that. The problem is people limiting their sugar intake, as you just said before.
That's right.
You know, I mean, we literally, as Americans, go through hundreds of pounds of sugar on average per person. A lot of that is not normal sugar that you're adding to your coffee or something of that sort. That's usually through high fructose corn syrup, because most people can't physically even eat that much sugar. The only way to get that much sugar is through high fructose corn syrup, because it's so concentrated and it's it's basically so strong for what it is. That's why it's so toxic to the liver. And on top of that, it's made out of fully GMO corn, almost 100% of the time. So not only are you getting this really, really, really toxic sugar on the liver, you're getting GMO processed sugar on top of that. Horrible stuff. Best thing to use on that is...
And glyphosate.
And glyphosate, yes, exactly. The monk fruit sweetener that we have is incredible, and the coconut sugar we even have is incredible. That one tastes basically like sugar in the raw. That one's really good. The monk fruit basically is an incredibly good one too, that has no caloric impact on it, doesn't spike sugar, and neither does the coconut sugar. So if you need to use something for baking, something like that, that's great. I know mom, for my birthday, I wanted some brownies and stuff like that. So she made some brownies, really good brownie mix, organic brownie mix, and substituted with monk fruit for them. Dramatically dropped the caloric intake down of the brownies, and on top of that, really had no significant, really aggressive impact on the pancreas. You're going to have some of the organic flour and stuff like that for the carbohydrates, but when you're not adding in, you know, a quarter of a pound of sugar into it, it really, really makes a difference on that aspect of it. So, yes, sugar's addictive, man. That's one thing that I always tell people when they're trying to get anything better on their body, whether it's inflammation, whether it's energy, whether it's immune system, you have to cut sugar out. Can you use it in small dosages on a rare occasion? Absolutely. It's probably not going to cause any significant issues if you're healthy. But using it on a daily basis, especially a daily basis on high quantities, absolutely not. It is so addictive, and this is why you see people that get so hooked on it, where they have to constantly be snacking on candies all day. You see them, they're constantly opening wrappers. So you look over your desk, look somewhere, open another wrapper up, eat another candy. And you're like, golly, you've eaten like 18 York peppermint patties today. How many's enough? Oh, I just got craving for sugar.
They get
addicted to it, literally addicted to it. And as you see in those tests with mice, when they get it long enough, they will literally go for sugar more than they will cocaine, which everybody I think on the planet knows cocaine's not healthy. It is very addictive, and it's not good for you at all. But the mice will pick the sugar over the cocaine. That's how addictive it is. So the biggest thing I always tell people is you need to detox on it for a week. If you're trying to get back in shape, if you're trying to get healthy, detox on sugar. And when I mean detox on it, I mean detox on it. Cut it completely out of your diet, at least for an entire week. Low glycemic carbohydrates, meaning sweet potatoes, oatmeal, brown rice, no heavy sugar products at all. Nothing with sugar, period. Make sure you're drinking a lot of water. Make sure you're drinking lean meat, eggs, organic salmon or wild-caught salmon, organic eggs, and really keep your diet clean for a week. The first couple days you go through a sugar detox are horrible. You do not feel good. I'll tell you that right now. Your energy's low. Basically, you crave sugar constantly. You're trying to get everything situated. If you throw in our cinnamon extract fuel burner, that massively helps to stabilize the blood sugar with the alpha lipoic acid and the cinnamon extract in that. That will really help out with decreasing the sugar cravings and keeping your blood sugar stable so you're not constantly going through these spikes all day. And then, like I said, after about a week of that, of cutting that out and really keeping your diet clean, getting your water intake up, it's like you get this clarity moment. And you, all of a sudden you're like, man, I have more energy. I think better. My inflammation's down, I'm ready to go. And you really will notice that the more you do that, the better you'll feel, especially if you throw in some stuff like the Ultimate Multiple or Multiple Powder in there with it. It'll completely change the way you feel. And you'll notice if you go to eat sugar again, not only is stuff start becoming incredibly oversweet a lot of times when you try it, you won't even feel good after you eat it, which will make you not even want to eat it again, because you're that had way too much sugar in it. I got a headache from it now, my energy level's down, my blood sugar's all around for the rest of the day. I want to go take a nap. I don't want to eat this crap anymore. I'm going to try and eat clean still. And then you'll start eating clean and you'll realize it. That is how effective sugar is on the body. And like I said, if you use it on a rare occasion for something, it's not a big deal. Your body will process it just fine. But using it all day long on a regular basis, no good, not healthy. If you got to use it in baking and you got to use it in stuff, use our coconut sugar or our monk fruit. Those two are amazing for getting that stuff. Really, really good, healthy bakery foods without a bunch of sugar in them, Dad.
You're absolutely right, Austin. Stay away from the artificial stuff. And if you are going to use regular sugar, get sugar in the raw that's organic, that hasn't been sprayed with glyphosate and chemicals on the crops. That's very important. By the way, ibuprofen has been linked to a 30% increased risk of cardiac arrest. I mean, you know, these non-steroidal anti-inflammatory compounds work by blocking the pro-inflammatory enzymes COX-1 and COX-2. Thereby, they suppress the body's natural inflammatory response. The process can help to relieve uncomfortable symptoms, but does nothing to address the root cause. Experts are worried that consumers are being lulled into a false sense of security, and they're not being told the truth that you have a 30% increase of heart attacks when you use these types of things like ibuprofen, Advil, Motrin, these types of products, or Aleve. You don't want to be taking this stuff every single day, because the warning is now your heart health is at risk. In fact, the FDA right now is actually strengthening the label warnings on these drugs, letting you know that they can cause you to have a massive, massive heart attack. So be real careful with those types of products, that over-the-counter stuff. It's really, really hard on you. Now, this is a different type of story. I want to read this one real quick. This came up the other day, and I didn't get a chance to read it. Their wealth has vanished. This is from Zero Hedge, Tyler Durden, or whatever his real name is. Their wealth has vanished. Baby boomers file for bankruptcy in droves. This is something that's interesting to me, because a lot of people over the age of 65 now are completely and totally broke. In fact, they're so broke that they're, you know, always at the tip of the iceberg, and there's a huge amount, millions and millions more underneath the water, with their, like, using iceberg as a metaphor. And what isn't helping is that many older parents report that helping their brat children or their good children or their broke children contributed to their bankruptcies. Seattle bankruptcy attorney Mark Stern says he's seen parents co-sign loans for $10,000, $20,000. I've seen it up to $100,000, by the way, for their children. Okay. Only find themselves on the hook when their brat children, their good children, or their bankrupt children couldn't service the debt. When you're living on $2,000 a month, and that includes Social Security, when you have rent and savings that are minuscule, it's extremely difficult to cover and pay student debt for your children. Other parents had also co-signed their children's loans. And he goes, I never saw parents with student loans 20 or 30 years ago, Mr. Stern said, filed for bankruptcy. It's not uncommon to see student loans of up to $100,000. Then you see parents who have guaranteed some of these loans, and they are no longer working. And they have these student loans that are difficult, if not impossible, to pay or discharge in bankruptcy, because the interest rates keep going up the further out they go. And these are the children's loans. CEO of Elder Law of Michigan, Keith Norris, said that the bankruptcy was a hot topic among callers to legal hotlines he established for older adults. They worked their whole lives and did what they were supposed to do, he said. And through circumstances like a late life divorce or death of a spouse or excessive medical bills or having to raise grandkids, or having to pay their children or grandchildren student loans, have put them in a situation where they simply cannot pay the bills. I'm going to go ahead right now and really slam George W. Bush. He changed the bankruptcy laws many years ago when he was president and made it much more difficult to discharge things like student loans and bankruptcy in general. Bankruptcy was put into our Constitution by the forefathers of our great country to prevent indentured servitude. In other words, yep, they didn't want you to be a debt slave, a bond servant. People would sell themselves into slavery on a ship to come over to the United States, and they would work as slaves for like 7 years in order to have the passage paid for to the United States. And when this happened, they were able to come out of that and be set free. Well, they didn't want that to go on in the United States after we had our Constitution and we set up the Republic. They wanted to be able to, if a person became financially dissolved, you know, they couldn't, they were insolvent, they wanted them to have the ability to walk away from the debt. Now, should you intentionally run up bills and try to pay back things or not pay back things on purpose? No, you shouldn't do that. But if you have something that happens to you, like an earthquake opens up and sucks up your home and it's gone, and you didn't have homeowner's insurance, and now you owe $300,000 on a mortgage and you have no house, you know, that's a problem. The same thing if you were trying to be a good grandparent or a good parent and you signed your children's or grandchildren's student loans and now they come back on you because something happened to these kids. Let's say the worst thing happens, that the child dies and they basically return, then they go to you and they say, you got to pay this debt off. And you're like, the kid's dead. We don't care. You can't bankrupt these. You co-sign these. The Bible says don't co-sign anything. It says surely your bed will be snatched out from underneath you. I've learned that the hard way. Years ago, when I was in college, I'm sorry, I wasn't in college. I was teaching college in Tallahassee. I had one of my students come to me, and it was a girl. It's a real nice girl, and she's a swimmer. I'm not going to mention her name out of respect for her and her family because it's been 40 years ago. Who knows where they are? And I remember she had to borrow $500. She wanted to buy a little motorcycle to drive around on campus. And I told her, I said, okay, I'll help you with it. She goes, but they won't give you the loan. And sure enough, I co-signed it. And sure enough, she didn't make the payments. You guys already know how the story works. And I finally had to go to her, and I said, look, I trusted you. And she goes, I'm sorry. And I said, you don't understand. They're coming after me now to pay your motorcycle loan. You know, $500 then is probably $2,000, $3,000, $4,000 now. And I said, I just really don't see any point in me having to pay your bike off, because I don't even own the bike. Remember, when you co-sign something like a car loan or a motorcycle loan for somebody, you're not on the title.
Yep.
So even if you pay it off, you don't get the asset. In other words, you pay off their car, you pay off their motorcycle, they still get to drive it, and you have no legal recourse to try to come and take it because you signed on the note as a co-signer, as a guarantor, with no name on the title at all. And if you put your name on the title, then if they wreck the bike or wreck the car, then you end up basically being financially liable for what they did if their insurance doesn't cover it. The only way to do that, if you're going to do this, is you have to loan the money to the person yourself and be the lien holder on the title. Now, I'm telling you guys a little trick here. That way you don't have the liability because you don't own it, but they owe it to you to pay you back, and you have the right at that point to foreclose on it, but make sure at that point you do have them sign a promissory note, make sure that it's notarized, so in the event that you have to go back and get the asset so you get your money back, that you have the ability legally to do that. But better yet, don't even do that. Stay out of that loop, because what can end up happening is you can destroy a friendship. I had a girl who used to work at the Mercedes dealership years ago. She came into a real hardship financially, and she was like a receptionist, and she knew my wife and I real well. And one day she called us up, and for various reasons she had lost her job, and she couldn't eat. And she came to the house, and she goes, I don't know what to do. I need to borrow $100. And I said, no. And she said, what do you mean? She said, okay, well, I just thought I'd ask. I said, no, I'll give you $100. She said, what do you mean you give me $100? I said, I'll give you $100. I said, don't worry, it's okay. I said, I give money to my church anyhow. I'll just look at this as a gift for, you know, what I'm doing to the church. I'll just give it to you direct, and I'm not going to be able to write it off or anything, but I don't care, because I want to be that person that helps people and widows and elderly people who are in need, because I want to be that guy. And she goes, I said, no, you're not going to pay me back. I said, if I loan you the money and you don't pay me back, then I'm going to be hacked off because you owe me money and you didn't pay me back. I said, yep. If I just give you the $100, it's going to be a blessing to me, and it'll be counted for me in heaven. And she goes, wow, I never really thought, you know, you guys were that strong of Christians. And I said, oh, yeah, that's how I really do live. And I think about it for a second, guys. If you're tithing on your income, let's say if you make $1,000 a week or a month or whatever, and you give the church $100, you know, and you get your tax deduction on it, and you save your $30 or $40 on tax deductions on it, what difference does it make if you give it to somebody who really needs it and you bypass that whole rigmarole? Somebody that you know, a family member. You think, well, what do you mean you're telling us not to tithe? I didn't say that. I never said that. I didn't say not to tithe. I said, what difference does it make to God? Because he knows your heart. 10% is 10%. And quite frankly, I'm about to start fussing here in a second. I've seen churches who have people in charge of the money who are so stupid that I thought I'd seen the bottom to stupid, and they proved to me there was no bottom. Okay? I mean, I watched Carpenter's Home Church here in Central Florida get built for like $5 or $6 million 30 years ago, 10,000 seat auditorium with like a $5 or $6 million loan on it, get paid off multiple times by the different people who owned it because of the interest that was being paid. Then finally, this huge 10,000 square foot facility was bulldozed and hauled off as rubble, and the $10 million or $15 million that had been paid on this facility, including all the interest, it was gone, Austin. Millions and millions and millions of dollars is gone. See, that's what I said. I don't know where the bottom of stupid is. I see stuff like that. So is it better if you have a church and you know somebody who's hurting in the church? Maybe it's better if you know they're hungry and they can't buy food, which I've done this too. You go buy food, go in your pantry, get a couple bags, load up a couple big bags of food, and just go to their home and say, the Holy Spirit led me to think that maybe you're not really feeding or have enough money for food. I did this with a friend of mine named George years ago. He came by the house. He started a new business. They were hurting real bad cash flow-wise. I loaded up hundreds of dollars of groceries. He came by to visit us one day. I said, oh, by the way, I'm going to give you these. Take this home with you. He said, well, why would you do that? I said, because you're my friend. And it was all organic stuff. It wasn't like I went to the, you know, Walmart and bought it. It wasn't one of those. I mean, it was the good stuff, the good food, right? And he was so shocked. He was so overwhelmed. See, the Bible tells us that we're supposed to prove our Christianity by how we act. That's what James tells us. He says, even the demons believe in God. Then they tremble. But he says, you got to act out. Now, this is a big debate that's happened for thousands of years in Christianity. And Martin Luther was one who really brought it up to a head on this whole topic of works. You know, you're not saved by faith through grace, by works, or anything that you do to inherit the kingdom of God. It doesn't work that way. It's by grace. God loved you so much that he sent his son in his image to die for you on the cross to fulfill your righteous obligation to him to become part of the kingdom of God. There's nothing you can do for that. But what it also says is that we're supposed to take care of each other and support the orphans and the widows and everybody else. So in the event that you're between church homes right now and you're not sure what to do with your money, find somebody who you know is hurting financially. Now, I'm not talking about they're hurting financially because they can't afford to make their cable payment or their four car payments or all the stuff they bought on credit they shouldn't have had. I'm not talking about people like that, but you can still give them food if you have to, if you feel bad for them because they made some stupid decisions. But people who are really, really hurting, and I have no problem doing that. I do that all the time. Just the other day, I was over in Sarasota, and a guy was sitting on the side of the road in the rain, Austin, in the rain with a sign that said, please help, I'm hungry and homeless. Now, he's in the rain at an intersection. And so I reached out to the window and gave him some money. I thought, he can't be doing this because he wants to. He wouldn't be standing out here in the rain. And he's probably 70 years old, and I felt so bad for him. But I didn't see anybody else helping him out but me. But I thought, he said, well, you shouldn't do that with people standing on the side of the road. Okay. If you don't do that, don't do that. That doesn't matter to me. I just felt as though I needed to do that. Because here's what I've learned over a long, long time ago. You cannot give God. And when you take care of people, God's going to take care of you. And what it also proves to you from a subconscious standpoint, now this is into the psychology of it, that there's plenty of money for you. God is the creator of the heavens and the earth. He made everything. He made everything. He doesn't care if you make $1 million a year or $100,000 a year or $20,000 a year or $10,000 a year. He'll give you whatever you believe him for. That's the truth. I believe that with all of my heart because it doesn't matter. It's all an energy field anyhow. But what we have to do is we have to have the ability and the want to do what's right in God's eyes. And so to me, Austin, if I know a church is really wasting and squandering money, which I've seen many times, I'll designate offerings. I'll say, I'm giving you this money or this tithe, and I'm designating this for the building fund. I want it applied to the principal of the loan of the building. Okay? In other words, if you got this huge loan on this building, let's put this towards the principal. So I'm not just letting you go out and squander it. I'm going to let you put it towards the principal of the note and that kind of stuff. You say, well, that doesn't help them with the overhead and the daily activities and all that kind of stuff. Okay, if I'm going to church that handles all that stuff right, then I'll give my tithe or whatever, and I won't designate it. But, guys, I've seen some crazy stuff in churches. And I've seen churches who don't want to do two services in one Sunday because it's inconvenient for the pastor to speak twice for an hour. So they want to open up a whole new facility and spend millions of dollars to build a new facility, and then they end up going bankrupt. Seen it over and over and over and over. Because a church facility can pretty much only be used for a church facility. They're pretty monotasked, and they're very difficult to sell as real estate, even commercial real estate, if you need to, except for the use of another church, because it pretty much means you pretty much have to tear everything down and start over again. So, guys, it's one of those things. Be very careful on who you give money to, and I have no idea how I got off on this. Oh, yes, I remember. All the baby boomers filing bankruptcy. And I'm going to say it again. Be very careful on the TV preachers. Guys, there is not one TV preacher that I would send money to. And that's a pretty strong statement. Okay. Now, there are a few of them. If I attended their church locally, I would give them money because I like them and I know them personally. But the vast majority of them, and I've worked with a boatload of them, are not who they claim to be. It's not what you think it is. And I tell you what, guys, keep your money in your local church, support your local pastor, support your local kids programs, and help to promote Christianity the way it was supposed to be promoted, not through TV evangelists and their six private jets and their 14 different mansions and their lifestyle that would rival kings and queens and popes. I better quit talking. Austin, what's your next story, bud? I'm about to get in trouble.
Yeah, that was some pretty accurate stuff, though, man. I like it. It was definitely good stuff. Well, down here in Florida, I saw this article today, and I just started giggling on. I wanted to talk about it earlier because you had brought up Bill Nelson. I'm going to bring it up right now. The Democrats now in Florida are already pulling the Russian involvement with the 2018 midterm election. They're already pulling this card. Democratic Senator, basically, yep. Bill Nelson, is saying now, coming out yesterday, saying Russian operatives have penetrated Florida's voter registration system ahead of the 2018 midterms, he said Wednesday, adding new urgency to concerns about hacking. The state, however, state of Florida, said they've received zero information supporting this claim whatsoever. He goes on to say that they have already penetrated certain counties in the state, and they now have free rein to move about. So one individual basically from Tampa Bay Times asked him about another thing that he had said, and he goes, well, that's classified. I can't talk about that.
That's right.
And then the Florida Department of State came out yesterday, and they said that a Florida Department of State has received zero information from Senator Nelson or his staff supporting his claim. Additionally, the department has received no information from DHS or the FBI or from the Florida Department of Law Enforcement that collaborates any of Senator Nelson's statement, and we have no evidence to support his claim whatsoever. Now, of course they don't, because it doesn't exist, but this is why he's saying this right now. Open your minds and think about this for a second. They already know there's a good possibility that they're going to get their butts handed to them in the midterms, so they're already starting the propaganda and the rhetoric and the groundwork for basically Russiagate 2.0 for the 2018 midterms. That way they can incite more violence either right before, during, or after the elections in order to push to disqualify the results or try to go for a recount or try to go through and hack them on the backside of it. So instead of campaigning, what we've seen now, instead of the Democrats campaigning most of the time after the midterms, all they now they want to keep doing is yelling fraud until somebody believes them. And so it's so funny to me when I saw this article today, I started giggling. The problem is a lot of people are probably going to buy into this, especially a lot of the people that have been brainwashed by the CNN fake news and everything else, that Bill Nelson now is already saying that Russian operatives have penetrated Florida's voter registration system, and they basically have now free reign to move about, and they're going to hack the election for the Republicans again. Unbelievable that these guys will not stop lying. You pretty much can be guaranteed that when these guys even open up their mouth to breathe, they basically are lying, Dad.
Well, Bill Nelson's an idiot. He's a senile idiot. He's a nightmare. And I'm going to say this. This extreme level of liberalism to the point of pushing communism into the United States and vast this militant socialism like we saw and basically not wanting to work, but everybody spread the money around and let everybody else work 80 hours a week while you sit around and basically lay down at the beach every day and get a suntan. Okay, this type of militantism, okay, that if you don't want them to lay in beach and get a suntan, they're going to beat you up or shoot you because they want your stuff.
Yeah.
Okay, this is a problem. This is a real serious problem. It's almost a type of mental illness because it's unbelievable to me. And the reason this is happening with a lot of people, especially in the state of Florida, as they're coming from these third world countries now into the United States that are extremely socialist. Okay, they're very communist. Yep. And they're, you know, like Venezuela, you know, like Colombia, you know, like Chile, all of these different, the communists had huge inroads into these countries, you know, back in the 60s and the 70s, and they're socialists. And so they can't think through the fact that if everybody gets in the cart and there's nobody left to pull the cart, there won't be any food to eat. They miss this concept. I mean, they somehow this concept's eluding them. I mean, South Africa used to be a huge exporter of grain all over the world. Now they're having to import grain because they can't feed themselves because the communists took over the farms of the white farmers, put black farmers who had never farmed before. And I've told you this story multiple times. And so this is how they think. It's like a mental illness. And the problem is, communism and socialism becomes a pure democratic form of government in which the it's basically ruled by mob is what it is, Austin. When the mob rule comes in and it says 51% of us say the other 49% of you have to give us all your stuff or we're going to basically shoot you or put you in prison, that's mob rule and that's socialism. That's a true democracy. You don't want that. Democracies don't work because pretty soon everybody votes themselves everything. See, we have, you know, what is it, 30, 40, 50% of the population of the country now in the states and everything else work for the governments, the local municipalities, the county municipalities, the state, the federal government. I mean, millions upon millions, tens of hundreds of millions are actually working for the federal government, some type of civil service, you know, working for the school systems or whatever. And so when all of these people get larger than the group of people that are pulling the cart, they can vote themselves raises or do whatever they want to do. It's crazy. Yep. By the way, good news here out of Italy, mandatory vaccinations have stopped for children in Italy. The Italians had to get nook of this, and they said no more. So now previously Italian law mandated that children must receive vaccines before they could attend preschool and kindergarten. Yet a shift in the political winds has reversed the government mandate. Mandatory vaccination is expected to be halted in Italy for one full year, allowing all children to attend public school. So they're not giving up on it, but what they're saying is they're going to halt it because their parents simply refuse to give them the shots. Here's the thing. When you have yourself, when you give your children a shot, or yourself, you talk about stepping out in faith, you talk about a leap, you talk about taking a risk, you're putting a foreign substance directly into your bloodstream that you have no idea what it is, if it was tested properly, and what's it going to do to you. I mean, think through that for a second. You know, if you open up a can of milk and it's sour, and you get it in your mouth, you spit it out and go, God, that was awful, I'm going to rinse my mouth out now. And you spit it out. You can't spit out a vaccine. You can't do that. Your body ends up with a giant histamine reaction to the doggone thing. Your body has massive inflammatory response. You end up with a cytokine storm. You end up dying from it, especially children, or causing permanent brain damage. And I mean, that's why it's called an encephalitic scream when these children are screaming when their brain swells from this. I mean, you can't spit it out. Your body's got to deal with it, including now you've got toxicity from aluminum, from mercury, from fetal tissue cells from aborted babies that were just put into your children, and from all other types of allergens, including peanuts and latex. All this stuff got injected to you at once. And you're like, wow, if I had only known. Well, that's the thing. Always ask yourself a question. What will you allow them to do? I mean, it's so funny. I mean, I'm so funny, also. I mean, I won't even go into a restaurant with and get their ice cubes anymore because I know they have fluoride in them. I won't do it. I bring my own water into restaurants now. And you say, well, that seems kind of silly. Well, I tell them. I say, do you have distilled water? Do you have distilled water in glass? I'll even do this. If you have spring water in a glass jug, you can bring that to me in the jug sealed with a fresh glass with no ice. And I'm okay. I'll pay for it. I have no problem doing that. I say, if you don't, then I'm just going to drink my own water. And they always say, okay. They don't care. And plus to them, to the waiters, they don't care because it's less work because they don't have to refill your water jug.
Yep.
That's a fact. You've been a waiter, also, so have I. And so it's just one of those things. So, guys, I'm really happy that this vaccine stuff has stopped in Italy. Let us pray that we in the United States will also wake up and stop some of this nonsense. What's your next story, bud?
Oh, I fully agree with you on that. And to go back to the aspect of socialism, as you were just talking about here, it looks like now President Trump is going through and he's banning welfare as far as on allowing welfare-dependent legal immigrants to resettle permanently in the United States now. So basically, if you come here and you're a migrant and you get on welfare, you basically can't resettle permanently, period, at all. They're not letting you do it at all. And so what they're saying is now, this is basically, they said on average right now, they said currently the United States currently spends around $57.4 billion a year paying for the welfare, crime, and schooling costs of the country's mass importation of 1.5 million new, mostly low-skilled legal immigrants every year. In the last decade, the U.S. has imported more than 10 million foreign nationals, is on track to import the same amount in the coming decade if legal immigration controls are not implemented. So the National Academies of Science released a report 2 years ago noting that state and local American taxpayers are billed on average $1,600 per year per immigrant to pay for their welfare, where immigration households consume 33% more cash welfare than American citizen households on welfare. And so this is crazy now, because this is what we've done. Even going through the legal process, we've seen this so many times, where people come here legally, they're completely, you know, they go through the system, they get their paperwork, they do what they want, and as soon as they get their paperwork, bam, they go on every single subsidy they can get. Free cell phone, free housing, free food, free transportation, free health care, everything they can do. Well, what they're saying is, now if you go on that, you are never going to be allowed to resettle here permanently. You're basically going to be in limbo, and there's going to be a chance of you basically getting deported at a certain time, or if your card expires or any of this stuff, and getting it basically renewed, period. So what this is going to do, this is going to really decrease the amount of people that simply want to come here, pretty much to go on the next generation of socialist money that's coming through. Because that's exactly what Dad just said. A lot of those countries down south, they've been groomed in that communist socialist mentality, and a lot of these countries now are failing. They're utterly failing.
That's right.
Look at Venezuela. They're completely failing. So now the only thing a lot of these people know how to do is go to the next best communist socialist country, which is pretty much the United States has turned into. So they figure, hey, even if we don't go there illegally, if we go there legally, it may take us a little bit of time to get in there. We may get our paperwork, may get everything good to go, but as soon as we get in there, we're completely covered. We don't have to worry about money. We don't have to worry about health care. We don't have to worry about food. We don't have to worry about housing. Nothing. We literally can go there and completely roll off the United States government. Because on average, when I've looked at now, a family of two, basically, say like a single mother and a child, one, just one and one, on average, if they basically set out on full subsidies for the United States government with housing, food, everything, they make on average about $38,000 a year, and that's not including adding extra kids to the mill. A lot of times when you add in 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 kids, it can go all the way up to $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 a year in total cash and subsidies that they're receiving from the U.S. government every single year. Hence why they're saying here almost $60 billion a year is spent on that, on legal immigrants in this country, and that is something that we simply cannot keep putting the bill for. As Dad just said earlier, you know, it's not right to sit here and say, well, you have to pay for this, and you have to pay for this, and we're going to force you to pay for this, and we're going to vote that you have to pay for this, and basically, if you don't pay for all of our stuff, we're going to hang you, or we're going to throw you in jail. That's not right. I mean, it's exactly what Dad just said in the description of a true democracy. Once you have 51 people that want all of your stuff, you're out of luck. You better have a lot of ammo and a bunch of guns, because they're coming to take everything you have. And that's what the founding fathers wanted to completely and totally prevent from happening in this country, because they saw exactly what happened in England, where you have the upper echelon, the ultra wealthy, basically say, hang him from the bridge. I didn't like what he said. Oh, he didn't pay his taxes? Throw him in debtor's prison. Still understood that one. You owe the king $1,000, so they throw you in prison. How are you ever supposed to pay it back if you're sitting in a sell the rest of your life? Never made any sense to me when I've heard about that, but it just shows you that the mentality of what these guys are trying to do and how far it's gotten out of hand, even in this country, Deb.
Austin, if I were to redo, if I became president of the United States, I'd immediately pass an executive order rescinding that crap that George Bush did, and I would basically do the best I could to get passed through Congress. So when you file bankruptcy, you file bankruptcy. Then
yeah.
If you had student loans, gone. Done. Just gone. They're gone.
Yeah.
So if you're to the point of bankrupt, what they said was, what was funny, they said there were students were doing back in the 70s when they passed this law that you couldn't bankrupt, and students would go to school for 4 years, get student loans, and then file bankruptcy before they started their job. Okay, whatever. I don't care. Who cares? Because the few students that did that sure didn't need to make this thing a nightmare for everybody else. And to me, it just shows you who runs the country. And that's basically the bankers. The bankers passed that legislation in the 70s and with George Bush again to make it more and increasingly difficult. Now, if you even got a job, it's hard to file bankruptcy. You have to be pretty much destitute with no job to file bankruptcy. It's awful. And it shouldn't be that way. By the way, this is crazy. Armando Frank. This is in Marksville, Louisiana. He was sitting on his tractor when he was approached by police who were going to serve him a warrant. I've watched the video, by the way, for alleged trespassing. He was up on a tractor. When Frank asked to see the warrant, which the cops never produced, he was tasered, choked, and pulled from the tractor and chokeholded. The problem was he died, and he never once did he try to hurt the officers. They choked him to death and killed him. Now, guys, this is the kind of stuff that I hate. I mean, I absolutely hate this, because what this does, this creates a major problem for police officers that are good people. And people like this, and of course the family now is suing these people because it's awful what's happened. And so the sad part with all of it is that, guys, you know, it's very important to know the sheriff in your community, the sheriff in your county. And the other day, we had some issues, and I ended up having to call Sheriff Grady Judd up. I mean, the sheriff of the county, he personally called me back. He goes to our church, and I know him. And I thought, wow, how blessed are we that we actually know Grady Judd, the sheriff of the county, which is the highest law enforcement person there in the county. I mean, the police departments can't arrest him. There's no way.
No.
And it's just so nice to know that we've got a godly man who has a Bible on his desk in his office who basically runs the county as far as the law enforcement officers. Now, we have some other people in Lakeland, the police officers in Lakeland. They were horrible, but Grady J. cleaned that up, too, a few years ago. So my thanks to him. Guys, God bless you. I love you guys. I got to pray for you yesterday. I appreciate you so much. And looking forward to the show tomorrow. And I got to pray for you. I got to pray for you this morning. I love you guys so much. You guys are awesome. And thanks for supporting us. Thanks for getting your vitamins from us. Thanks for supporting Health Masters. And thanks for keeping us on the air. I love you guys. Also, go ahead and finish it up.
Absolutely, guys. We really do appreciate all the support, and thank you for all the positive emails. And really just thank you for promoting us and fighting this fight with us and what we're seeing right now with just the censorship and everything in social media throughout the entire internet. It's getting worse, but we have to continue fight harder and harder and harder, and we cannot let up. We have to stay persistent with this. So we appreciate your support. Thank you for praying for us, and even some of you guys, you know, just buy something as simple as a multivitamin from us. That helps out so much, and we really do really appreciate all of it. Be sure to check out the website if you need anything. The product of the week on sale right now is the probiotic 350 pillion. It won again. We ended up listing it. This batch is made from February this year. Really, really fresh batch still. If you guys look at time of packaging, it's 650 billion, but we have to make sure that by the end of 2 years, it still meets the 350 billion CFU requirement, so that's why it's listed at 350, but right now the batch is only about 5 months old, so it's still incredibly strong, and it's on sale right now for over 15% off. I went ahead and did a big sale for you guys on that because we had such a big request for it, and I had so many people email me about it this week asking me if it was going to go on sale. I said, well, if you guys vote for it, it'll go on sale. It's not up to me. Well, you guys voted for it, and it won. So last time it was on sale for 10% off, I went ahead and pretty much shaved it about as far down as I could and have it for 15% off. And, of course, if you order two cans or more, you get free shipping on that product. Really, really good product. You can read about it on the website at healthmasters.com. Be sure to, if you need anything, give us a call or email us. You guys have an absolutely awesome night. Have a blessed night. Be safe. Be strong. Stay frosty. And I'll talk to you guys again tomorrow, as always. We'll be right back.